Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Paul always helps us have difficult discussions, and we're talking this week about how to face a disability.
Yeah.
And want to be sure that we have the right kind of estate planning going into that. You want to review, we started this last week, you want to review a little bit about what you're meaning by this.
Yeah, you can find the first episode at legacyandfaith.com, where all of our podcasts are. But we started this series with a discussion of what does it mean to be disabled. And what I mean is a broad term of I need help for one reason or another. And there is a rather large likelihood. So if you're 65 years or older, statistically, there's a 75% chance that you will need assistance for a period of time during your lifetime. And this is what we're trying to address, which is if you need help, do you have the proper documents? Are they aligned? Are they ready to go? Are they clearly giving your intent? And that may be one of the biggest things that we kind of ended the show with last week, which is I have a concern that a general document, such as a financial power of attorney, may not give enough specifics to really care for somebody when they are in this position of needing assistance. So in other words, a child, a good friend, another family member is coming alongside of you because you have lost the ability to manage your life, whether it's your finances, whether it's your health decisions, whether it's all of them. We're really talking about you are in a place to where you've lost control, and that's a very scary position to be in. And that's why you're saying this is a difficult conversation because we really don't like this conversation. But we also understand that this is a real possibility, and statistics would show that it actually is a possibility. So medical technology is getting better and better, but it doesn't mean that the quality of your life is improved at the end. What it means is that you're living longer. But maybe what I see from afar, and I have not researched this, is that you live in a more compromised place at the end of your life, because we can save your life because we have better medications to keep you going. But it doesn't mean you're living the quality that you want. And so you may be alive, but you may need assistance. What does that look like? And last week we reviewed what does it mean to use a financial power of attorney. And like I said, I kind of have the conclusion that it's a broad document. Even by the way the law is written, it's intended to be very broad. And it may not have specific instructions for an individual. As a matter of fact, I've reviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of financial power of attorneys, and I have not seen specific instructions embedded in them to do this with my money, but don't do that. I want to be cared for in this manner. So in other words, the document should be giving guidance, but it doesn't. And so in my system, when we use a revocable living trust, it is a more fluid and a document that gives greater instructions, and we're actually able to address some of these things through a trust mechanism to where almost every financial power of attorney I've ever seen is a templated document with general broad powers, because that's what the statute says to do. And so it's legally sufficient, but it may not be actually what is in the best interest of the client that stands in front of me.
So using a trust is definitely better, in your opinion.
So in this area, my answer is yes. I believe that it is a more powerful instrument because it is more detailed. We have the opportunity to ask deeper questions and place them into a trust, and there are greater duties associated to a successor trustee than there are to a financial power of attorney agent. And so So we can go through some of these things because I think it's a very important view or was comparison, I guess, that we look at these and compare them to say this is what a financial power of attorney agent would need to do versus this is what a successor trustee would do. And actually, it's pretty detailed in how do you act as a successor trustee. The bottom line is this, Mark, and that with a financial power of attorney, the objective is to get as much power to the agent as possible so that if the agent needs to do something, they can do it, but there's very few guardrails around that agent's duties. Okay, so they're supposed to act in good faith, they're supposed to act with honesty, and they're supposed to do what's in the best interest of the principal, the one that they're caring for. But if there's not something specific, then how does the agent know to actually respond or not respond with the finances in one way or another? Here are a couple other differences. In a revocable living trust, when it is properly done, I would caution people who are listening to say, oh, I have one of those. I'm good. Maybe, maybe not. I've seen a lot of templated trusts as well versus more specific.
How do you template a trust? I would think that would be really
insufficient. Yeah, they're there. Trust me.
Insufficient.
Trust the trust guy. They're templated. And so, and really depends on your experience. If you had multiple hours of discussion with your attorney, there's probably a high likelihood that it's going to be more aligned with what you desire. If your experience was an hour or less with your attorney, then it's probably a lot of templated information in there. But besides that, in a trust mechanism, one major difference is that a successor trustee has a duty to invest the finances as a reasonable person would. That does not exist in statute for a financial power of attorney. So again, you're supposed to do what's in the best interest of the principal, but the trust actually raises the standard and says, we also want you to be investing it for the beneficiary. So in other words, there is a higher duty of care over the finances to ensure that the finances are going to operate in the best interest of the beneficiary long term, not just making today's decision. So there's one rather large disparity. Now, most trusts that I've seen also use just go ahead and invest. But what I know from my clients is that if someone is compromised, because that's what we're talking about, a time that you are disabled, what are the differences right now between a financial power of attorney and a trust? And if someone is compromised, almost to every single client, there's only been a few exceptions. Most clients look at me when I ask this question and say, I want to make sure that the finances are invested conservatively for me because I don't know how long I'll need to use my money. So do you want a limitation in your document that does not allow your successor trustee to invest in cryptocurrency, as an example,
right,
that does not allow your successor trustee to invest in penny stocks. So penny stocks are companies that are in financial straits and their stock value is extremely low. How about trading on margin? So you borrow from your account and use that money to trade. And then if it goes bad, you got to pay it back. So there are certain high risk investments that most of my clients say, I don't want the person who's carrying over my finances to do that. So there are no boundaries in most trusts that I see dealing with this issue. It's a broad statement of just invest. Now, there is a prudent investor rule that attaches. And so maybe the pushback would say that the average individual would not invest in cryptocurrency, although it depends on their age group now. So would an average 30-year-old be far more aware, or 40-year-old even, be far more aware of what cryptocurrency is? And might it be reasonable in their thinking to say this is a good investment versus their parents, who are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, are going, I don't even know what that means. And all I know is that people have lost money and I don't want it. So I want to be able to take the voice of my client and be sure to work it into the document to give greater instruction to the person who is going to be managing the money, because there is a duty to invest.
Yeah, it sounds like you really are trying to set up this agent to be kind of the manager of the ongoing financial well-being of the person in the market and different, you know, investments and things. So it's like a financial planner almost.
Well, and that's what the duty of a successor trustee is supposed to do. They're not supposed to be a financial advisor, but would it be wise to go get financial instruction? Okay. Absolutely. Right. Versus a financial power of attorney is absent of that in statute. And so there is no duty to invest. It could sit in cash, or they could come back and they could invest in high risk things. And like I said, even in a trust in broad language, I'm not so sure that there's reasonable arguments to be made that investing more high risk is actually in the best interest of the money you're caretaking. But that is not what my clients typically want. Mm. They want to be more conservative because it brings them more comfort that there is something that is tried and true. So most trusts don't even have that language in it. As a matter of fact, I've never seen a trust limit high risk investments. But yet almost every single one of my clients wants that attribute. So if you're never asked that question, how could it ever get into your document? Mm. So unfortunately, the estate planning world is extremely dictated off of who you ultimately elect to sit down with and what is their process, what is their detail, what is their experience in developing revocable living trust, because unfortunately, a lot of people do quote unquote estate planning, but then don't focus on it. So maybe their experience isn't quite as rich or robust as other people who actually really do focus in on this area of law, do it on a daily basis, and have the years of experience backed up so that we can get to these more robust questions that clients actually would have, but they don't know that they have this type of a desire. So we're like limiting in investments. So getting to the right person is critical in this step of estate planning.
Facing a disability, you need the proper estate planning in place to be able to do that with confidence. And you like how Paul thinks about this subject. You need some help from his services. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, my website is the best place, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at facing a disability, got to have the right kinds of documents in place, the right kind of trust or will, but Paul encourages trusts because they're just more powerful, much more specific on how people can do things.
Yeah, and I don't think I've said it this show. I know I said it in our first show of the series, which is it better to have something than nothing? And it's absolutely better. It's the worst case scenario to get stuck in a health circumstance with no documents at all. And then specifically, if your care from a doctor was going in a direction that your loved ones didn't want, or if you didn't have anyone else on your accounts, how are your bills going to be paid? So it is far better to have a financial power of attorney than to have no power of attorney.
Yeah, again, I'm a little confused about the financial power of attorney is a document that is both in a will and a trust.
So, yes, we need a financial power of attorney in both scenarios. Okay. And so it's always in a will package and it's always in a trust package.
Okay.
And so the financial power of attorney manages things that are in someone's name. So that's the easiest way for me to say it. So if you have a will, then your bank account would remain in your name. If you have a trust, we would move your bank account to the name of the trust. So just for banking purposes, if it's a trust, the successor trustee would be empowered because it's in the name of the trust. But if you have a will package, the bank account is still in your name, so then we would use the financial power of attorney. Now, why do we still need a financial power of attorney when we use a trust? Well, there are certain assets and there are debts that remain in your name. So, for example, any IRA, and now I use that term broadly, which I mean by that term, any tax-deferred account, an IRA, a 401k, a 453b, a Roth IRA, any type of account that has tax-deferred status by tax law must stay in your personal name. I can't put it into a trust. So that asset, which oftentimes is a large asset for some people, that must be governed by the financial power of attorney, even if you have a trust. So we always need a financial power of attorney. Also in the trust world, I have a credit card. Well, that's in my personal name because we don't put debts in the revocable living trust. So if I had to have a credit card canceled, that comes from my financial power of attorney because it's in my name. I have to sign a tax return. Even if I don't want to, I still have to. I have to sign a tax return every year. That's a personal signature. If I can't sign my name or if I don't have the capacity to do so, then someone else has to do it in my personal name. That's the financial power of attorney. So we always need a financial power of attorney, even when we use a trust. It's just that a majority of the assets are in a trust. They're going to be managed by a successor trustee versus the financial power of attorney is done for someone's name, anything that's in their name. And in a will, if you use a will and you use a financial power of attorney, then all your assets are in your name still because you're using a will. And that's potentially going to drive us towards a probate process when you pass away because the financial power of attorney ends at the moment of death. So therefore, you can't use a financial power of attorney after someone dies. It's good for your lifetime. It's a personal right to name someone, to manage your name. You lose that personal right at death. Therefore, a financial power of attorney ends at death and cannot be used.
And we're talking about facing a disability this week. And so that's what we want to clear up is being able to still function, your estate still functions, even though you're still hanging around in whatever condition.
Yeah, that's right. And so in a trust model, then we still need the financial power of attorney because someone still has to pay your bills. All your bills are in your name, all right? You've got your electric bill, you got your gas bill, your water bill, you got Comcast. Have you ever tried to call Comcast if your name wasn't on the bill? What a nightmare. And so, I mean, just unreasonable. So So you need a financial power of attorney in both scenarios. You need a financial power of attorney. It doesn't matter what type of a plan you use. The financial power of attorney is geared towards your lifetime to assist you during your lifetime when you are unable to assist yourself, or sometimes just when you want the assistance. So now there are some really big differences with each of these instruments. And I was talking about a trust, and there's a financial investing duty in a trust that's not found in a financial power of attorney. So other things in a trust, which is you have to keep beneficiaries informed. So there's a continuous reporting requirement. In other words, there's a built-in integrity system in the trust design versus in a financial power of attorney. The only person that you're supposed to care for is the principal. So it's almost like the financial power of attorney is not concerned with those who come after you. They're only concerned with the person in front of you. And actually, most of my clients deeply care about making sure that their beneficiaries are going to be cared for in the way that they envision. But that is absent in a financial power of attorney. As a matter of fact, there's even laws that state that if the financial power of attorney agent acted in good faith, that the beneficiaries cannot come after them. So everything revolves around good faith. That is slightly different in a trust, which is a trust has a higher standard to care for beneficiaries as a collective unit, not just the person in front of you. So now we have an instrument that is more family focused instead of eccentric on the one who created the form. Yes, we want to make sure that you're well taken care of. Absolutely. But most people's desire and passion is to ensure that their estate gets to the right people in the right way. And that can happen in a trust, but there may be very little recourse to beneficiaries if things were done improperly with a financial power of attorney. So unless they were stealing or taking money, you know, in other words, taking money for themselves, breaching that duty of loyalty, there's very little recourse to go after a financial power of attorney. That's not the same thing in a trust. And so in a trust—
A lot more guardrails in a trust.
Far more guardrails. And I explain it to clients like this, that if your successor trustee does well, then they are going to be very well protected. They're going to have a strong defense against someone attacking them. But if they do wrong, then your beneficiaries are going to have a road to come against and make sure that the person who was doing wrong is corrected. And so it's a little bit of the best of both worlds. Do right, and actually it's the safest instrument you can use for that successor trustee. Do wrong, and that instrument is going to bite you. And I think most people would see that as a fair system, which is protect the ones who help me, and then for the ones who do wrong, who steal, then let it bite them. It is really difficult to sue an agent through a financial power of attorney, and there are better guardrails in a trust to make sure that beneficiaries are cared for. And that's typically what I see that most clients want, is a long-term vision for their finances. Let's see, what else? So keep an account. And also we have the ability then to give very specific instructions in a revocable living trust. Can we put them in a financial power of attorney? The answer is yes, but the cost becomes so much more that it typically drives somebody to use a better instrument anyway. So can specific instructions be put into a financial power of attorney? Absolutely. But will it remain the same cost? And most of the time, will packages are cheaper. And that's what drives people there, is that they don't have much finances, or sometimes they're just being cheap. And so if we start using specific instructions, then of course that's going to drive up the cost. And the more the cost goes up for a will package, the closer and closer you get. And you might as well just use a revocable living trust and do everything. Well, I was going to say you might as well just do it all right. And I don't mean to be so harsh with that, but it's a better instrument. So the cost would begin to creep up towards the same price as a trust. So therefore, most people would just rather use the
mess.
One. Yeah. And so those are a lot of the differences, is that a trust is not going to just simply give carte blanche power. It is going to be more descriptive, which also, by the way, gives the successor trustee more confidence to act because they have more instructions instead of a general instruction, which says, just do what's in my best interest. Well, I don't know what's in your best interest. Right. I've never done this before. So an instrument that gives clear guidelines, in my opinion, protects the client better, and it's going to give greater security to the person who's going to help you. And ultimately, when they do well, it's going to protect that person. All of this is a win-win-win, in my opinion.
Facing a disability with good estate planning. It's so important. You like the way Paul approaches this subject and you want to find out more about his services. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.